Hi, everybody. Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reiser, and today I'm joined by two very special guests, Jay and Ong. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Jay. I'm from the engineering team on Windows Azure Storage, and I'm out here to kind of talk about the new features.
Okay, great.
Ong, I'm a PM in Windows Azure Storage team. With my colleague Jay, we want to talk about Windows Azure Import-Export service.
All right, great. Well, we're going to go ahead and get started. Ong, why don't you take it away and start talking about the import-export stuff.
Sure. We launched Windows Azure Import-Export preview feature in November 4th. It's a preview. It's currently available in United States. However, I mean, it's not restricted only to the customer in United States. If customer outside of United States have a data, but if they have a way to like ship their data to their U.S. destination, and then they can, within U.S., if they can ship it to our data center, we will be able to accept it also.
And this, you know, you mean like shipping like a hard drive, you know, actual hard data, not sending it over the internet to our data center, something like that, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's.
Yeah, it's all about when you don't have the great bandwidth to kind of a fat pipe connecting to our data centers, this is how you can ship data faster, and Ong has some great data on when it'll be useful for you to ship drives and things like that, and use our import-export service rather than using the internet to kind of transfer data in or out.
Sure. Yeah, like Jay said, two key scenarios is that, you know, customer has very little bandwidth, and not reliable bandwidth there, but they want to import or export a lot of data to our cloud storage, right? And then this feature can be very handy. So we can back up with some of the good data. I mean, if you look at it, if customer use T1 line, it would take 75 days to upload 1 terabyte of data. And if D3 line, it could still take, I mean, 63 or 64. So it's a lot of days to upload it.
This is going to be a much faster process shipping my data you know, directly to you up to you guys.
Yep.
So yeah, as he said, anywhere from 63 hours to a month.
Sure.
Right.
It's a long time to wait for your data.
2 months rather.
Sure.
So it's a long time to wait. Yeah, that's true.
All right.
Yeah. You want to talk about the hardware requirements and the drive requirements that we have? And
sure. Yeah. So we currently accept the internal HDD drive, hard drive, and maximum we can do is 4 terabyte. It's not our limitation. The industry right now is the maximum that we're seeing is 4 terabyte. So we tested with 4 terabyte drives, right? And it's an internal HDD and with SATA 2 interface we accept, right? And we do have a security requirement. We enforce customer to encrypt their data with the BitLocker before they ship the drive to us. Or for export job, we encrypt it with the BitLocker key before shipping back to the customer.
Okay. So if I'm a customer sending the data, is there some easy way for me to encrypt my drive and send it over to you?
Yeah. So we also have a tool that you can download. And we have a blog which has a link to the tool, but the Windows Azure Import-Export tool kind of can be used to prepare your drive. It will copy your data, I guess, and onto the drive, encrypt it, and it has a lot of other things that Ong will go through in terms of creating your job, making it more simple for you to create the job and ship your drive as such.
Great. Yep. So, well, we could. I think that the best way to go over the scenario is through a demo.
Sure.
I think that.
That
so we
great.
Could go through a quick demo on how you would do that, right? So assuming that I will cut through the chase because I'm sure a lot of you know how to log onto the portal and manage a storage account. So
probably
basically,
most of the viewers have been on the Windows Azure portal, hopefully once or twice.
All right. So let's go through that. It's a wizard like we allow customer to. Manage and create jobs in two ways. One is through very friendly, user-friendly portal interface. Another one is REST interface. But today we will just focus on the portal flow. So because it's a wizard-like feature. So assuming that Chris, you want to ship a hard drive to us, and basically you will log onto the portal, and then you will select one of your storage account. So I select one of my test storage account. And then like Jay mentioned, the first thing that you will do is that you will prepare the drive, right? So you will download the drive to your desktop, and then you would prepare the drive in like three things that you would do. Basically, you will copy the data from your network location to your drive. You would map, you know, there are many things that you can do, but three key things are that, you know, copy the data, you could map which folder will go into the which container in the storage account. And then the third thing is that you could encrypt the data. Then the output of the tool will be a journal file that you will upload it through the portal. So I could show that to you here.
The other thing is, I guess it's a limited preview at this point.
Yes.
And very soon, yeah, we might open this up, but at this point it's a limited preview. So you want to go through the steps, what is that needed?
Good point. So not everyone will have access to the service. Mm-hmm. So one thing is that we will provide you, there's a, if you go to Windows Azure storage blog, we have instructions on how to apply for to get access.
Great.
So basically we are interested in how much data you want to ingress, right? And then what's the region? And then actually those are the two key things, how much data and then what's the region, right?
And we'll have the link to that at the bottom of the, we'll have a link to that at the bottom of the video as well.
And the storage account name is needed for us to just get a feel for where you are located and things like that.
Now
other
you
than the region,
you mentioned that it's you know North America right now. But if I was outside North America, I could ship my data over as long as I could just get it to us in the U.S. Does that mean that it has to be imported into a North American region, or could I send it to you to you guys and have you import it into a region outside of North America?
We could, in fact, I think it's one of the legal and trade requirements is that you are a customer, you have a subsidiary in US, mm-hmm. you ship it to your subsidiary in US, so it has to originate from the US location.
I see.
And then you will ship it to our US location, right? Once you get to that, we could in fact copy it to your storage account anywhere.
Great.
Yeah, and this is again in the preview mode where we only have certain locations and like the customs clearance and things of that.
All so complicated stuff.
So this is a good way to get through it.
So yeah, what we will provide you, getting back to Jay's original point about like preview mode, once you provide that three information, location, amount of data, and then your storage account name, we would decide, in fact, you know, sometimes it makes sense to just copy the data over the internet also, you know, depending on, we would advise, but in some scenario, we'll provide you a token, and then you will enable using that token, you will enable your subscription.
Mm-hmm.
So only users which has been enabled to use Windows Azure Import Export Service Preview will see those features in the portal.
Gotcha. Okay. Great.
Yeah. And the other common question that we've got is, can I import table data and stuff like that? It's only for blobs today, and so this is
good
only
to
for
know.
Blob data.
Yep. So, assuming that I'm switching back to the demo. Assuming that your subscription is enabled, you will see import export preview icon here. That means your subscription is enabled to use import export service, and then you could see that three key steps: basically download a drive preparation tool, and then prepare the drive. And then since we talked about that, I'll quickly go through the import process.
Okay.
So, simple as clicking on this on the link, and then you will see it's a wizard-like thing. Four key steps. Number one is to prepare the drive using the drive preparation tool. Assuming that you have done that, we would basically let you complete the wizard, and then we would ask you to ship the drive through Federal Express. In our during preview, we only support Federal Express right now.
Now, does the person have to do anything special to get that FedEx package slip, or do they just have to say, hey, I want to send this to this address?
Yeah.
So the wizard actually walks you through it, and I'm assuming you're going to just go through the wizard. Were you planning to just go through? Do you have some... the thing is, the tool is going to output some journal files and stuff like that, which is needed.
You're going to have to put that in the wizard.
So you have your contact information, you put this in.
So while Jay is talking, right, let me fill in the form,
right,
and then
so you get all your contact information and you upload that journal file to the portal. And what portal does is extract important information from the journal file and makes that REST call to us to say, hey, create this import job or export job.
I see.
Right? And then depending on your storage account location and things like that, you get a list of locations that you could send this drive to.
Okay.
Right. And you can choose the location that you want to send it to. In many cases, you might just get one. In some cases, you might get zero.
Okay.
Based on a few things out there, based on our configuration. But once you get that location and you choose it, and so what Ong's doing now is basically uploading the journal file.
Yeah.
So that the wizard can get all the important information that I was just talking about a little bit earlier.
So I'm uploading a journal file, which is a simple journal file. Mm-hmm. It only contains one drive, so it has a lot of good details about how many files, size of the import, all that good stuff. You add it, it tells you the drive, grid of the drive. So it has only one drive, the mm-hmm. job has. And then if your job contains multiple drives, then you will see many drives here.
Yeah, so you'll see the drive IDs here.
Yeah.
Is there a maximum or a minimum number of drives someone would need to get into the preview? Like I know it's 4 terabyte max on a drive, but can I just send you 1,000 drives?
Or That's a very good question. You could send 1,000 drives, but needs X amount of jobs and you.
Right.
Yeah, so we cap it at 20 active jobs right now. And each job, we only allow 20 drives.
Okay.
Ten drives.
10 drives.
10 drives. Yes.
Well, that's quite a bit of data anyway.
Yes.
So I think that's just fine.
Yeah.
So
and each job is targeting a storage account.
Okay.
Right? And so you can literally fill up your storage account with that much amount of drives.
Great.
So uploaded the journal file. Basically, you could define a job name. So we say on desk job, desk import job, right? And one key thing that I would like to call out is that since your the storage account that I use is in the West region, mm-hmm. it will map you to the, you don't have a way to select it, but we default you to the data center that you have to ship it to, and then provide you the address that you need to ship it to. And then I'm not going to save it right now because this is a
desk create run. A real job.
Yeah, real job, and then
somebody's waiting for a drive then.
Exactly, they're waiting for the drive.
Right.
So once you do this, the next step is basically FedEx, right? You need to go ship, it prints out the address label, and or rather you print out the address label and ship it, and then you get the tracking number.
Yep.
And you come back to this portal and complete the wizard.
That's correct.
Great.
Put the tracking number in.
Sounds pretty easy.
And any point in time after you ship it and then enter tracking number, you could track the state, like whether drive we have received it, it's in the process of copying, ready to be shipped back to you and all that. You could track through the portal. At the same time, you could call your REST interface and then do the similar thing.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I think this is for general users who want to use this and who have tons of data to be imported or exported mm-hmm. For various reasons, then this is an awesome tool. And then for tool builders, you can always use the REST API to build tools around this
that
make it more easier.
Perfect. Sounds like a very easy way to get a lot of data into your storage account.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
So if you are interested, just go to our Windows Azure storage blog, look at the instructions, and if you think that it's a fit for you, just send us, and that's an email address that you can apply and then try that. A couple of things that Jay and I can talk about is pricing right now, pricing and next steps,
sure.
So pricing is $40 for drive, flat fees, because it's a special pricing for mm-hmm. preview. It will change when we launch GA.
Sure.
We haven't fixed it yet, but so GA is basically, we mentioned that in preview is for in the US region, mm-hmm. but there are ways for us to import data from outside of United States. And then on GA, we plan to launch worldwide, right?
Great.
And we haven't, the date is still DBD, but Jay and I are working hard to reach that goal.
Yeah.
Anything you want to?
No, I think that's about it. Oh yeah, the other thing is when you choose an account, but a different location, you may pay for egress.
That's correct. Yeah, it's good to stress that. Otherwise, customer will be surprised.
Yeah,
sure.
We could do that, like you said. You ship us 10 drives. We happily will be copy, import, and copy it back. But mm-hmm. that may be specific to this program, but other bandwidth fees.
Now, is the export part just as easy as the import part?
Yep, yeah. Similar flow.
Similar flow.
Similar flow. So, I mean, I'm not going to go walk you through that, but basically, you will create a job. Mm-hmm. The only key distinction that we will say is that you will ship us the empty drive to us. For us to like.
And then you'll do everything that I would have done on my side to import it, and then you'll just send it back to me.
Yep. You also would have selected the containers to export kind of all the blobs, and then you can use blob prefix and things like that. Once you give it to us, that manifest file that is stored on the disk, we look at that and see what all blobs to copy and store it. One more thing is, for whatever reason, if we cannot copy, import a file or export some files, there's a log file with all those details, and there's also a tool which you can run to kind of correct this.
Okay.
So you don't have to ship another drive if it's just one file.
Sure.
You can run this tool and it'll tell you what files to upload and it'll try to upload it from the tool.
Okay. So this tool handles. I have like one issue, I could just upload that one manually.
Precisely. It's kind of a verification tool that you can run at the end.
Okay, perfect.
And our blog covers in detail everything which we couldn't cover in the in like 20 minutes out here.
And like I said, we'll have that link at the bottom of the video.
Cool. All right.
All right.
Thank you very much. So I will leave it up to Jay for next section.
Yeah.
We're back. Go for it, Jay.
It's been a couple of exciting months for Windows Azure Storage team with the release of import-export that we just spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, just a couple of weeks back, and time flies, we had quite a few features that we released. To name a few, cores, JSON, and real-time metrics, what we call as minute metrics.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a couple of features that are pretty interesting ones, and other smaller changes that I'll talk about.
Okay.
But the big thing is cores. And for those who don't know what cores means, if you had a web app that needed to talk to storage, and you wanted to actually talk directly from the browser rather than scale your application, you couldn't do that because the browser would prevent anything originated from your domain to talk to storage domain.
Okay.
Right? It's a cross-domain
call,
cross-origin call, which the browser would prevent.
That's a pretty common problem in web development of that sort, right?
Yeah. And so to get around that problem, in absence of cores, what users did was to actually spin off compute roles that act as a proxy.
Sure.
Basically, in the same domain, spin up roles that'll just act as a proxy to storage.
Yep.
And so with introduction to cores, what happens is, our storage service, APIs, would return certain headers and also cater to the options call that is required for the browser to make a cross-origin call.
Mm-hmm.
And so we added this capability of enabling cores on your storage account. And once you enable it, now you can make calls directly from the browser through JavaScript to talk to storage resources as such. So now to upload a blob or to show images, you do not have to go through a compute service, but your browser can make that call cross-origin. And I have some demos out here that I'll quickly show.
Awesome.
And so this has been, and cores are supported for blobs, tables, and queues.
Okay.
The other thing that we have is JSON, support for tables. And as we know, Azure Tables supports OData.
Mm-hmm.
And OData always supported AtomPub.
Yep.
AtomPub is it's a bloated protocol, and I'll also show some difference in packet sizes for just a normal query. But JSON is a more concise format, and obviously there's no need of transformations if you're already handling your data model as JSON in your browser, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can just directly use JSON and use the same data model to kind of reflect your classes.
I'm really excited about the JSON support, actually. I get asked about JSON support for table storage all the time, so this is really great.
So we finally enabled it, and thanks to the OData team that has supported that protocol, and they have three variants of JSON. One is the normal JSON, which has all the metadata in links and all that information, and then they have this minimal metadata, which has a little more like properties, property tags, and a little more metadata, or rather, a little less metadata than the normal one. And of course, the third one is the no metadata, mm-hmm. which is awesome because it's pure payload that you want
awesome.
Over the wire. And so that's just the bare minimum that you can have going over the wire for Azure Tables. So yeah, these two were the big ones. And of course, real-time metrics. We had the hourly metrics always available to the users. Mm-hmm. It was released about 2 years back or something of that sort. But now what we've done is release minute-level metrics. And this is crucial because our metrics can actually hide certain spikes, which minute metrics can show. Mm-hmm. Because if you have, let's say, 10,000 requests in a second and no more requests, it shows a flattened spike, or rather flattened request rate in an hourly metric.
Sure.
Whereas in a minute metrics, you can actually see, hey, yeah, I had the spike because of which I had these throttling errors or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Or my application didn't do very well because of the spikes that I had in my application
sure.
Request to storage. And so these minute metrics are very useful in that. And it can be enabled, again, very similarly to the hourly metrics.
Mm-hmm.
But the table name's a little different, and I can go over those.
Great.
And so, of course, the other thing is we changed the hour table names to indicate primary and things of that. The reason is we will also have read from secondary enabled. And so this is a preview mode. Again, you need to sign up very similar to what you did for import-export. You mm-hmm. go sign it up. And then once you get approval, you can go and enable your storage account for which is geo-replicated. You can enable read from secondary. And what we basically, once it's read-enabled with geo-replication, you can start sending read requests to your secondary location,
mm-hmm.
right? And this can be used basically to get higher availability than just sending your request to the primary. And so this is very, again, very crucial. We have a few storage client library related updates with respect to that, where mm-hmm. the retry policy, you can say primary, then secondary. So we'll try the primary. If it fails, it goes to a secondary. If it's not found, it'll go back to the primary and things
okay.
like that.
That's great.
So the client libraries have been updated to kind of take the location mode, whether it should target the primary or secondary. Writes always have to go to the primary because the secondary is not open for writes.
It's read-only.
It'll fail. It's a read-only secondary. And so, yeah, that was one more change. Another change which was which people have been asking us is allow shared access signatures for copy blob on the destination blob. And we've enabled that with the new version.
Great.
And of course, this is going to be available on a blog with the source code. But this is generally what I wanted to show is I have the storage account, and let's assume I want to upload a picture,
mm-hmm.
right? So this was the first request that the browser sent when I tried to upload an image.
Mm-hmm.
I selected an image on the local drive. What the browser does is it sends an option request to that resource to see if it allows cores, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether the storage site allows cores. And what it sent was, with the options, it sent the origin, obviously, and it sent the origin where it came from. Right now it's localhost.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to all the request headers that this method would need and what method it would use to send the request.
Okay. So right? This is like a, hey, can I send this request before I want to send the request?
Right. And then what the browser expects is this particular response, which says, yes, allow the origin,
mm-hmm.
Allow methods, and it's only send put right now because it requested for put.
Mm-hmm.
And then what headers you're allowed to send, and what's the max age of for caching this options request. So the browser doesn't have to send options for everything.
Mm, okay.
Right now I've set it to zero so I can at least see on Fiddler whenever I try to upload.
Right.
And then of course you have a few things, allow credentials because we want to send authorization, authentication headers and things of that, right? And so we send this response back and this tells the browser, oh yes, you can go ahead with the put request, right? And this put request was made by my JavaScript. So the next request is the actual put request.
Mm-hmm.
And the put request, again, is sent with the origin and all the required headers.
Mm-hmm.
And what comes back is, again, you have these access control response headers, which tells the browser, oh, yes, you're allowed to return this back to the client. And these are the headers you can expose and back to the JavaScript client.
Okay.
Because Right now it says expose these particular headers. If I didn't expose request ID, for example, the JavaScript on your the JavaScript running in the browser couldn't access the request header.
Okay.
The request ID header, rather. And so this is the kind of protocol that we see. And so now you don't need Silverlight, you don't need Flash or anything of that sort. Pure HTML5,
great.
Which is uploading blobs to my website.
Now, can you show us the portal side of how you actually turned on Chorus?
Yes, that's a good question. And I have it out here. So this is basically through service properties is what you can, which you use service properties to turn on, and it's per service, blob mm-hmm. tables and queues. You have to do it 3 times.
Okay.
It's not for your storage account per se.
Okay.
And this is the same API that you use to turn on analytics, real-time metrics and things of that, mm-hmm. Hourly metrics. So this is that same API that you would use, and now what it has is another option to set cores. And when you I'm using the new client library, which has all these methods.
Mm-hmm.
I've created service properties out here. In the properties, I set the cores. I added a new cores rule where I say, yeah, allow all headers, allow all methods, which is put, get, head, post, and things of that, I guess. And then allow origins, I use star, which means any origin can access me.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, if I wanted to restrict, let's say, j.com, then I would have j.com here. So now if you, if the web page came from chris.com, for example.
It's not going to get through.
It's not going to get through.
Perfect.
Right? And so allow origins and expose headers, max agent second. So all these are knobs that you can set in your service properties.
Mm-hmm.
And once you set it, that's it.
So
it
now
switches on.
I just run this locally and it's going to go up to storage and say, turn this on?
Yes.
Perfect.
So if you run this, it's going to turn on, which I've already done.
Sure.
Not many explorers today have this yet, because it's just a new release.
Right.
They need to build that capability for service properties.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, cores is something which you can start off.
And this is just a one-time thing that
it's one-time thing. You set it for your service, each of your servers that you need to access from your browser,
mm-hmm.
and that's about it.
Okay.
I've done it for everything here.
Okay.
So I've enabled it for all my three clients.
Do everything.
Right. And if I go back here and I use query table, I'm trying to get both the things in one shot, which is real minute metrics
mm-hmm.
and JSON.
Right.
Right. And so I just query the table, and this is your minute metrics for blobs. This is where every minute, it's very similar to the hour metrics. It's per API and at a service level.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you how many requests you made. It tells you your total ingress, egress, average end-to-end latency, how many requests failed, because of what reason, all that information
yep.
that you might need for your monitoring as such.
Great.
And so you have dollar metrics, minute primary transactions, blob, table queue, right? And then you have dollar metrics, our primary transactions, blob, table queue.
Okay.
And so we've changed that table name with this REST version as such. That doesn't mean now you don't have your old data. You can think of this as an aliasing.
Okay. So you can use either name.
Yeah. With the new version, you need to use the new name.
Right.
But if you're still using the old version, you can use the older name.
Great.
So this is your minute metrics that I'm exposing out here. And if you look, I didn't capture that, but I'd captured earlier the call. And this is what happened here. I sent minute metrics for blobs. And what I got here is JSON objects.
Some very beautiful JSON right there.
Yes, yes. And the way you get JSON is you send this, I use the no metadata format, so mm-hmm. it's really beautiful.
Yes.
It's more beautiful than the minimal metadata. But this is what you need to do, accept JSON basically, mm-hmm. right? And then there's one more thing you need to do here. Your max data service version is 3. This is from OData.
Right.
Right. And of course, your XMS version is the latest one, 2013.08.15.
Okay.
So once you have set this, what you get back is all JSON.
And now the JSON support's not something you actually have to turn on. That's just on now.
It's on.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. You just need to use the latest versions and max data service version. And in your accept header, you can say, hey, I need this.
Great.
In JSON, right? And so I executed JSON out here for this query. And this is what was displayed here.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it, I got quite a few objects back. I think I queried almost for an hour, so about 100 rows back at least. And it had about 181K of data. I did the same query, and I can do that again. I sent it to the composer, right? And I just removed this piece, and I did an execute.
It's a little bit more data, you know.
It's more because there's more minutes since the last time.
Sure.
But let me do this back again.
Yeah.
So I keep getting more rows as the minute passes, right? And so it's almost 60% savings, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it's about 400K.
From XML back to JSON. I think that's a pretty big savings in data right there.
And so you can try out various formats. You can try out minimal metadata. That's about twice the size.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can try various things out here. No metadata is the best, but it assumes that your client is intelligent enough to know what the data types are, because you don't get any tags. It's just raw data that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to interpret everything on your client end. So it stays to its bare minimum.
So a few options beyond XML on different savings costs, with one being a lot of savings.
Yeah. This was JSON. And I think that was it for the demo. There's another few minor features, and we have all of that on our MSDN website with that version, associated with that version, all the changes. But one of the things that you can also do with this version of tables is, whenever you insert an entity, we used to return that payload back.
Right.
And this was OData,
right?
There was no way to switch it off. Mm-hmm. And in this new release, OData actually has knobs. So now you can turn off, saying echo off.
Okay.
And so if you do that in the prefer header, you won't get the data back. And so you can minimize the egress.
That's good.
Byte sent.
So another way to save, save on the
all
data.
This is all, storage is commodity. We do everything to save money for the users. So.
Well, that's saving a lot there. Great.
I think that's it.
That's it?
The secondary read feature, which I said, which I spoke about, and that's something which we'll again blog about. We'll have a blog out soon about more on that.
Great.
All
right, and we'll have links to that and the earlier stuff on the import-export stuff, so you can check out those down beneath the video. I'd just like to thank Jay and Ong for being on today. This is some great stuff from storage. I'm sure people are going to be really excited to learn about it and start playing around with it.
Yeah, and questions on the Windows Azure blog site, or the storage blog site, or on our forums.
Great.
Okay,
and you can follow us at Cloud Cover Show on Twitter. Also follow us on Facebook. Do you have a Twitter handle you want to share with everyone?
Yeah, it's JH.
JH, all right, so just like that, all right. Do you know if Ong has one?
Ong doesn't have one.
No, all right, so tweet Jay if you want to get a hold of Ong. Maybe he can pass the message along. All right, thanks everybody for watching. Hope you enjoyed today's episode.